He's a fine columnist for the Register Guard. Catch his work in the sports section. If you miss anything else, you could find online, registerguard.com. Follow on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are you today?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing good. How are you?
Awesome. Oregon football. We know Saturday, the return of Justin Herbert, they're bowl eligible, and, you know, a team who had dropped 4 of 5 would have taken a one-point win, but overall, when you consider Arizona scored first, how impressive was that win? Because Oregon kind of kicked their rear ends.
Well, let's talk about Oregon's defense a little bit.
Okay.
You know, that so much of the focus was on Justin Herbert coming back. And yeah, obviously he did completely revitalize Oregon's offense. But defensively, Oregon would not have won that game if not for the way they contained Khalil Tate. That was really impressive to me, especially as you mentioned. After that first drive, I was thinking, man, they're gonna get it handed to them all day here. But after that first drive, there was very little for Khalil Tate at all. A lot of credit to Jim Leavitt, a lot of credit to that defense. The combination of those two things, when you play good defense and you've got a quarterback who can throw the ball, that's a pretty good recipe. You can win some games that way.
Along the lines of the defense, it's like we talked about improvement, and we're such a result-oriented society, so when Herbert went out, it was like, yeah, and then the conversation would turn to they're not throwing the ball, they lost 4 or 5. Is it possible that we were witnessing it all along, but because they just look so horrible offensively, maybe we didn't have a true appreciation of where Leavitt and his guys have improved and taken this thing?
Well, I think that's a good point. When you don't have a quarterback, everything looks bad. Everything probably looks worse than it is, and there were still some good things happening in that stretch, even though the offense was not moving the ball through the air. But it the good things sort of got covered up just by the fact that they couldn't throw, and that put so much pressure on the defense that isn't there when Herbert's in the game. When your offense can stay on the field and move the ball and put points on the board and force the other team to have to try to play catch up. Now, that's a whole different deal than being out there on defense. And the offense goes 3 and out, and then you got to go back out there. And you've been on the field all day. It's a completely different thing when the quarterback comes back. But yeah, there were some maybe incremental signs of progress all along with the defense. But I don't know that I'd seen them really put it all together in a Pac-12 game the way they did Saturday against Arizona.
Now, in your post-game piece, definitely some tongue-in-cheek about calcium and chocolate milk, mixed in with the witticisms, you hit a really critical point. You mentioned baton twirlers, I'll throw in fans, program. It seemed like the moment Herbert was announced as a starter, you could almost feel it in the stands. And I think the optimism maybe got contagious?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair to say. I think there's just a level of confidence or belief that comes back the minute that guy steps on the field. If there was doubt before, now there's just a confidence that, okay, we're back. We can do this. It's kind of crazy to think that one player can have that much of an impact. We know that the quarterback is important to every football team. The most important part of any football team is the starting quarterback, and that's definitely been true at Oregon, maybe even more so than some other places, just because of the way Oregon plays. It's kind of the same deal we had with Vernon Adams and with Marcus Mariota before that, where you take that one guy out of the equation and it just changes everything. The whole house of cards comes down. But when you put him back in there, it's like nothing changed. It's back to normal again.
So who do we take off? Fouts, Harrington, Marcus, Musgrave, or Van Brocklin? And we already put Herbert on the Mount Rushmore of Duck quarterbacks. premature.
we may have to reshoot that video we did a couple of years ago. Get back and publish that. Chisel somebody's face off and republish that special section we did a few years ago.
All right, let's get right on that. How about from an optimistic point of view? Let's assume they hold serve Saturday. So 7-5. 4 wins last year. I think most reasonable followers had them at 7 or 8 coming in. So with all they've been through, new coaching staff, no longer if they go to a bowl, what's an accurate gauge as far as the level of success season one under Willie Taggart?
I think you'd have to grade it out pretty well, wouldn't you? I mean, I had them at 7-5, and that was not taking into account the possibility that Justin Herbert would miss 5 games. So, between the success on the field, the success that they've had in recruiting, I think you'd have to say that this year has gone about as well as you could hope under the circumstances for Willie Taggart. And I know 7 wins is not where Oregon wants to be. A lot of fans are going to maybe look at that and say, we're okay with 7 this year. Next year, with the schedule we've got, it better be 10 or 12. obviously expectations are going to be higher next year no matter what. But I think with the circumstances they had this year, if they can beat the Beavers and get to 7-5, that's about as much as anybody could have expected.
Unreasonable expectations from fans. You must work in the world of sports.
I know how this works. This is not my first rodeo.
So in about 45 minutes, ESPN rolls out the next edition of Who's In and Who's Out. I think we could make an educated guess, and it does appear there are some safeguards in place. Certain teams know they control their own fate, but right now, how would you rank them? I guess, who would be your 4 and maybe who just missed?
Well, I'm with the same 4 I had last week. I don't think there's any change. Alabama, Miami, Oklahoma, Clemson, Wisconsin still knocking on the door. I think it's interesting to look now and say, okay, who outside of that top 4 still controls their own fate and who has a chance to get in, especially among the 2-loss teams? I think there's some interesting scenarios out there for a team like Auburn. I think Auburn controls its destiny. And I think Ohio State's really interesting. If you talk about Wisconsin, I think it's a foregone conclusion that if Wisconsin is 13-0, Wisconsin is going to get in. But if Ohio State were to beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game, Ohio State's got 2 losses, but they're Big Ten champion. One of those losses was against Oklahoma in the kind of non-conference game that the committee wants to reward teams for playing.
Yeah.
So could Ohio State end up being our first 2-loss team in the playoff? I think that's an interesting possibility.
Sure is. Few more thoughts from Austin Meeker, the Register Guard. Men's basketball, we talked last week about moving on from the Final Four, how perhaps maybe a little odd the greatest season ever wasn't acknowledged in the opener. But, man, since Coppin State, they have crushed a lot of new faces, but some of the guys have a lot of college experience. Then you got the freshmen and Pritchard and Smith. What are you seeing? And I know it's 4 games in. As far as what this team might become, especially with this coaching staff.
Well, I think the Coppin State game is looking more like the outlier. Maybe it was just like opening game jitters, or just a night when the shots weren't falling. Because the other games, going back to the exhibitions, have been fairly consistent in terms of this team really being able to shoot the ball and put up some points. They're still finding their way. Elijah Brown has struggled, and he's going to be a big part of their team. They need him to get his shot right. And we'll obviously find out a lot more this week. The PK-80 is going to really tell them where they're at. And I think I got a feeling that they're going to go up to Portland and realize that they've still got some work to do. I think if they can come out of that thing 2-1, they'll feel pretty good about their Thanksgiving week up there. You know, because it's just, you know, they're going to be a work in progress all the way through, you know, up until Pac-12 play. But I do think they've showed some signs the last couple weeks that maybe they're closer than they looked in that first game.
And I think it's important to beat UConn because, man, what a great test that would be against Michigan State.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like Maui last year. You know, you lose that first game, and it really just takes all the air out of it.
Yep.
You know, you really like to get to that second game because you know you're going to get a good team, and you know you'll come away with three good games out of this tournament if you can just win that first one. Whereas if you lose that first one, then you know, gosh, did we get any good games out of this tournament?
Right. So yesterday we got the news, and I've wondered for years if Altman and his guys could start building that foundation, drawing quality players, become a consistent in the tournament, get guys to the NBA, what might be the ceiling? And now they land the highest recruit in program history in Bol Bol. I mean, you covered Kansas where this was ho-hum. We got another top 3-4 guy. But what kind of feather in the cap is this for Altman's program?
I thought Dana was unusually candid yesterday when he talked about how teams had been killing him on the recruiting trail because they never had a one-and-done, saying that they couldn't coach a one-and-done. And, you know, I guess we're going to find out, you know. I mean, up to this point, it's a legitimate question of, you know, what would Dana Altman and Oregon do with a one-and-done because they haven't had one. Troy Brown could be that this year. Bol Bol, you know, just seems like all but a foregone conclusion that he will be. Dana basically said that yesterday, that they expect he'll be one and done.
Wow.
So, you know, we'll have to see what they do with this now. They've done a really good job developing players, you know, taking guys who came in as 3- and 4-star recruits and developing them into pros. That's, you know, that's been something that Oregon's done really well. And, you know, when we say one and done, they haven't had any freshmen go to the NBA.
Right.
They've had a lot of one-year transfers come in and really play well. So there's a track record there. So I'm interested to see what they do. It's going to be next 2 years for Oregon basketball are going to be really interesting. And you know we'll see where it goes. But it's just a different, you know, they're in a different category now. They're running with a different crowd than what they have done in the past.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating deal to keep an eye on. And finally, a thought on baseball, about 8 weeks away from learning the new Hall of Fame class, Jim Thome, Chipper Jones, then you have the leftovers, Clemens, Bonds. Today, Joe Morgan, Hall of Famer, wrote a letter to voters asking them under three criteria, Mitchell report failed tests, about leaving the Peds guys out. Well, what do you think of an effort like this, or maybe what to do with these guys in general?
You know, I haven't read the letter closely. I haven't read it all the way through. I saw it on Twitter. I don't understand what he's trying to accomplish.
Right.
Why? What's his stake in this? I mean, all I know Joe Morgan as is, you know, the guy who used to be on Sunday Night Baseball and everybody made fun of him, and, you know, as an announcer, he was certainly not everybody's favorite. But I don't understand. Can you explain it to me? Why do you think he's doing this?
I think he's trying to take a stance because you're getting to the point where Pudge Rodriguez is in, and while he doesn't meet the criteria of, I think he said, failed drug test, admitting using, or identified in the Mitchell report should not get in. And we're getting to the point where I think with Piazza and Bagwell and Rodriguez, the suspicion level is pretty high, and he's trying to kind of block it at this point. But I'm wondering if, doesn't the Hall of Fame need to somehow acknowledge the Peds era and, if not allow the guys in for future generations, say this happened and this is why you see a guy who's first in all-time homers and 7 MVPs and he's not in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I've always felt that, you know, no matter how unflattering the history is, you can't just wipe it out of the books. you know, the reason you have things like Hall of Fame is to, you know, to appreciate your history and understand, you know, who the great players of previous eras were, and just to eliminate an entire era because of something that was a league-wide problem in baseball, this, you know, strikes me as going against the purpose of having a Hall of Fame. You know, I saw something today about, you know, looking back at the early Hall of Famers and their record on integrating the game. It's not very good. Those guys did some things that in our modern society we would look at and say, boy, that's despicable. But they're in the Hall of Fame. And I think, you know, I think the way to do it is put in your great players, but acknowledge their faults. You know, let people know that, yeah, we're putting them in the Hall of Fame because they contributed to the game in this way, but they also had this, you know, whether it was steroids or something else, you know, it's the full picture. I think you shouldn't gloss over it, but I don't think you can just eliminate a whole era of players.
Well, I was always kind of a hardliner, but somebody tweeted at me today and said, don't forget, it's called the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, which, you know, I thought that was an interesting point. It's what you said. It's a way of being all-encompassing, not just the good, just the documentation of history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Good stuff as always, Austin. I'd assume with all that's going on, you'll be staying put for the holiday?
Yes, I will be here on Thanksgiving. I'll be at the Civil War and probably, hopefully, making an appearance. PK80 have not completely figured that out yet, but it'll be a fun and busy holiday week.
All right. Always a pleasure. You and yours have a healthy and a happy, and look forward to catching up Saturday at Autzen.
Okay, same to you, Steve. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, take it easy.